This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The El Niño and La Niña phenomenon currently sweeping Malaysia has resulted in extreme heat waves and flash floods on the highways of Kuala Lumpur and Kuching, as well as the death of a trainee policeman due to heat stroke. The recent drastic change in our climate has also taken its toll on the agriculture sector, especially the growth of crops such as rice. Stefan Bass is the delivery manager of the Food Agriculture Organization's main area of work on natural hazards. He currently leads the FAO's Climate Impacts and Adaptation team.
Specific results on damage and loss, which we found through our recent study, which was also a global study, but it was the first effort in which we really tried to filter out and compare damage and loss and impacts on the agricultural sector as compared to other sectors, focusing only on developing countries. And the key finding of that study was that on average in developing countries over the last 10 years for that period, we found that 22% of all damage and loss, and just mentioned this, 123 billion, that would be about 22% in developing countries if we compare it with the losses across all sectors. And that is tremendously high for agriculture, much higher than we assumed.
However, the impact on the agriculture sector in the Asia-Pacific region is far less compared to other regions. This is despite the region being highly vulnerable to climatic hazards.
If we look at Asia specifically, these figures are a little lower. And for Asia, the damage is 16% of agriculture and the loss is 15%. And for Southeast Asia, even less. And there's a rule of the thumb, which we know is that on average, say, the better off the countries are, the higher their coping capacities are, the smaller is the impact specifically on agriculture. And of course, in more middle-income countries, the agricultural sector as a total is not as big as in developing countries. So this explains that the percentage of agriculture as part of total loss, some of the countries may be lower. And another feature in Southeast Asia is, of course, that since it's one of the most disaster-prone region in the world, we have to be aware that each different hazard has a different impact on the different sectors. Often it also depends on the moment in the agricultural cycle when these hazards happen.
But what is at stake here when it comes to the real cost of disasters to the agriculture sector?
In conjunction with the lives, we need to look at the assets which are at stake, which is the crops, livestock, agricultural infrastructure. This may be shelters, irrigation systems, etc. And third, what is at stake from our perspective in FAO is very important. When we talk about the impact of disasters, it's not only the immediate physical impact which hit people. It's actually also the impact on the food chain. What happens if there is no cow there anymore? People cannot milk the cow. They cannot live out of it. Some of them, the fields may be lost because they are washed away or whatsoever. So there is long-term implications on their livelihoods. It may have very long-lasting impact, and those are specifically felt in the agricultural sector. A good example is from the Pakistan floods, which had tremendous direct impact, but also we know that basically all the harvest of cotton was washed away. And this had long-term implications for the whole cotton industry because it could not function anymore for the following season. I think we also have to seriously take into consideration and think in the ways we put our countermeasures in place, short-term and long-term.
The people who are most at risk of climate change disasters in the agriculture sector are smallholder farmers who own small-based plots of land. Stefan explains some of the challenges faced by local farmers and suggests ways for them to adapt to the disasters.
General challenge we see is that farmers, particularly the more poorer segments and the smallholder farmers, they tend to be a bit risk adverse because they don't have the kind of the flexibility to go for big experiments because they really depend on that living. Not talking so much about the big commercial agriculture at the moment, because for FAO, of course, our first mandate is to take care of the most vulnerable and in that case the smallholders. And for them, this may turn into a challenge because very often when we talk with them and we try to experiment through farmer field schools, demonstrating and learning together how farming systems may be slightly changed or new technologies may be included into their way of working. They are ready to test as long as the risk is carried by us or by agencies in the context of projects. But very often we see that if it then comes to really adopting them, to mainstreaming them, they're very hesitant. So we need to work a lot on the awareness raising of people and the farmers. And I think the scenario of your future is they have to be flexible. They need to learn to decide in another way, and they may need to work much more flexible in a seasonal-based way of planting, in which they may switch around and come back and change. So this mentality of changing, that is a challenge.
He also recommends for effective policies to be practiced to reduce the risk of losses and damage in the agriculture sector during climatic hazards, such as droughts and floods.
First of all, we would say that we have to put a more proactive thinking, what we call disaster risk reduction. How can we already mitigate the impact which are due to happen if we try to reduce them in the long term as part of our development efforts? And so what we call disaster risk reduction, that needs to be mainstreamed in agriculture, because agriculture depends on the water sector, it depends on trade and on several others. This integrated view is very important. And we think that we have to link governance issues, planning issues, building of capacities at all levels, national to the local level, really helping communities and farmers themselves, that they know what to do, that they get access to technologies specifically which can reduce the impacts of the disasters, like early maturing varieties or submerged tolerant varieties, drought tolerant varieties, and hence the access, particularly of those who are most vulnerable, which are usually the more poor people.
However, assessing these technologies in this sector is still an issue. Stefan insists they should be prioritized, especially in disaster-prone areas.
A lot of those technologies are known. It's more an issue of access. So the policy option is to enhance the access of the most at risk and the most poor to those technologies, and then link the access to those technologies with the warning systems. One of the key tools we are trying to promote, for instance, in the Philippines, also in Cambodia, Thailand, of course, in Malaysia. This is in all the more, say, progressed countries in the region, to link the technology and the planning for technologies with seasonal weather forecasting, so that farmers are informed through private sector or through the extension services how the next season is likely to develop. Is it more dry? Is it more wet? And translate that into specific agricultural advice, crop advice, meaning shift your variety from A to B because this year may be drier, and get that to the people in time so that they can make actually a proactive decision and adjusting their farming system according to the forecasted season.
Another way to reduce the risk of climatic damages is by adopting the early warning system. Stefan explains how implementing this system can help relevant departments take quick action in the future.
FAO has some specific early warning systems related to food security, short-term and long-term, which are global but have regional and country-level dimensions. China and Laos recently were affected in locust infestation, so their early warning systems very specifically tailored to agriculture. Also, we have an information system, not call it early warning system, on price development, agricultural prices, which is also very important for farmers and also for the countries and for the entrepreneurs and along the food chain to plan in sustainable ways. This is one set of early warning systems, but they have, of course, to be combined with other early warning systems, which are given usually by the national or regional climate centers or the meteorological offices in the countries, which relate to hurricane warnings, which relate to flood risk, etc., due to weather events.
Another example of climate risk management involves the proactive no regrets strategy, a cost-effective plan aimed at maximizing the positive outcome while minimizing the negative.
They would have positive impacts at the moment in terms of increasing yields, at the same time not decreasing the natural resource base or have any negative environmental impact. But we need to also invest very strongly and massively in research and extension to make sure that for the future to come, where we all know with climate change situations may change even more drastically, that also then we are ready as a system to have the technologies say, at hand, which may need from season to season according to the increasing uncertainty we are expecting in terms of weather patterns in the future.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.